Aida, I give the floor to you.
Thank you very much, Hans, and good afternoon, everyone. We are very pleased to be back discussing primary financial statements this month. We have one paper only, but very good and important paper.
Yes?
I've stopped speaking because I hear, I think.
What are you hearing that we are don't hear?
I am just had some technical issues, apologies, but I managed to solve that, so I'm just gonna
Okay.
carry on. So I was saying we have one paper, but very, very important paper because it sets up overall principles for distinguishing between primary financial statements and the notes, and also disaggregation. And I will shortly hand over to Anne to introduce that paper. But I just wanted to highlight something we do every month in the cover notes for the papers on primary financial statements, which is to provide a summary of the feedback we have received on the proposals as well as the proposals themselves. And what we are doing now, we are updating this every month with summary of the decisions the board had made so far. So I just want to refer you to that so that you know that resource is there, and it's something we keep updating and working on to make it as useful reference point as we go on. But with that, I'm going to hand over to Anne to introduce the paper.
Thanks, Aida. Good afternoon, everyone. Agenda paper 21A sets out the staff's initial analysis and recommendations on the principles of aggregation and disaggregation and on the roles of the primary financial statements and the notes. We'll be discussing more detailed aspects of the disaggregation proposals, for example, unusual items and minimum line items at future board meetings. So the first topic considered in the paper is the principles of disaggregation and aggregation and disaggregation. And our analysis is set out in paragraphs 10 to 30 of the paper. We recommend three things that we think will improve the principles and their application. The first is to state more clearly the principle relating to the purpose of disaggregation, and that's that items shall be disaggregated if the resulting disaggregated information is material. The second is to strengthen the application of that principle by emphasizing that a single dissimilar or non-shared characteristic would be sufficient to result in disaggregated information if that information is material. And the third is to explore developing guidance on how to use characteristics to identify when to aggregate or disaggregate items. The questions on these matters are for the board are set out in paragraph 30 of the paper. So I'll hand it over to you for discussion.
Okay, the floor is open. Mary?
Anne, thanks. A couple of comments / questions. One is, when I looked at the wording in paragraph 23 and your proposed rewording of the disaggregation requirement, I came up with two questions. One is, how big a change do you think disaggregating on the basis of even only one non-shared characteristic would be? It doesn't make me opposed to that. I just want to be aware of whether we think this is a clarification that will change things at the margin, or whether we think it would be a very significant change. And so you may not have the answer today, but I think that that's something that I'd like to know. The second thing is, I was looking at paragraph 23. I was struggling a bit to understand whether these were observations in respect of the primary financial statements or the financial statements as a whole. The reason I raise that as a question is I don't think they can be statements about the primary financial statements, because if they were, then there would never be a basis for providing disaggregation in the notes that wasn't provided on the face, because, you know, and certainly putting some information in the notes instead of on the face is helpful to the understandability. So I think that these comments are and requirements are valid when it's clear that they're in respect to the financial statements as a whole, but I don't think we can say them regarding the primary financial statements. So those are my two comments on this section of this paper.
If I could just respond immediately, because I can answer, thankfully, both of those. But addressing your last point first, yes, definitely everything on page 23, everything in this section is about disaggregation in the notes. And we do talk later in the paper about how you couldn't be expected to do everything like this in the primary financial statement. So absolutely, it's to do with what's disaggregated in the notes.
I thought so, but it wasn't clear, and I just want to check.
Well, I apologize if it was clear, but you're right. That's the purpose of this section. And then on whether this emphasis on a single characteristic would be enough to disaggregate information, we don't see that as a change. I think we thought that was always the board's principle. It's just clarifying that is what the board intended, so that it's understood better and, you know, more robustly stated in the standard. But I don't think we thought it was a change from what you intended in the ED.
Okay. Bruce?
Thanks very much, Hansen, and thanks to the staff for the paper. My comments are just twofold. Firstly, around the wording in para 22-23. I agree with the principle that the purpose of disaggregation should be a lot clearer. And I like the idea of it resulting in information that is material. It's when I looked at the proposed wording, and I appreciate that the drafting probably needs to be finalized, but just when you look at the proposed wording in 23, which is the 25A, B, and C, I kind of felt we lost that a bit. So yes, I can see if you read 25A, 25B, and then you kind of get into 25C, we've put in that overriding if it is material in C, but to me, I would make it a lot stronger. So I would have put into 25, you could almost do away with C. I'd put into 25A and B, almost that part out of 22A that says, you know, if the resulting information is material. So to me, that's the key thing we're trying to get into. And I would ensure that we've put those, that we reflect that better. And to be honest, quite a bit stronger in the reworded 25A and B. The other thing I was just going to comment on was your question around your question two that you ask about exploring guidance around how to use the characteristics. I would very much support that. I mean, I think the reality is that a lot of people don't really understand what we're talking about when we're looking at those characteristics. And I think that providing some examples of that, providing a list of what the types of things, I think that would go a long way to getting a lot more consistency between the way people report. So I'd be quite supportive of that. Thanks.
So,
thanks. My first comment was very much aligned with Bruce's comment about the words in paragraph 23. When I get to your question one, I completely agree with what you have there. But when I read paragraph 23, I feel like we're not really saying that. We're sort of saying the opposite. I'd love to find a way to draft it where we're making the positive statement, which is you should be, you know, and looking at B in particular, you should be disaggregating on the basis of dissimilar characteristics in order to, you know, provide information that's material. I think a positive statement is more helpful than saying what sort of to avoid. Which I think is consistent with what Bruce was saying. On the guidance, I also agree that providing some more guidance would be helpful. I think though that we should be careful. I think it's really helpful what you've done in this paper. I should start with saying that. This focus on materiality is, for me, what was the sort of missing link in articulating what the heck is this all about. Because otherwise we risk ending up in a whole bag of rules where people are looking for characteristics. They need to know what we mean by a characteristic. How different does it be? How similar does it have to be? I think we're much better off if we've got a clear principle, which is you shall aggregate and disaggregate in a way that reveals material information. And then the guidance is supporting about how to think about achieving that. So it's very much a secondary thing, as opposed to starting with identify shared characteristics, and that's your job. Your job is to provide the material information. And I think if we tip it around that way, it'll be, I think it'll be a better outcome, and people will obsess less about the shared characteristics. The last thing I wanted to say, because I have to say it always, Aida, sorry, is on this quantitative materiality threshold. I completely agree with the staff response to 30A. There's no way we could have a quantitative materiality threshold that would be fit for purpose in all circumstances to say, you know, if it's a small, don't disclose this information because by definition it's not material. That won't work. I still think, though, that there might be some help for people if they've got a line item which is sort of other in nature, or, you know, very inclusive with a range of stuff, like, I don't know, selling and admin expenses or whatever those common line items are, to say if this number starts to be a big number, really stop and think carefully about whether there isn't more information that's material that's masked through that level of aggregation. So not a rule, not a bright line, but just a guide, again, to help people understand what it is you're asking them to do, that's sort of a practical pointer. You know, I'm not going to die in a ditch on that, but I still think maybe that has got a place, just to help people's understanding and to facilitate application.
Okay. Rika?
Thank you, Hans. I support the staff's recommendation, and as long as those examples of characteristics are provided in a principle-based manner, and those principles are linked to the role of primary financial statement to differentiate what should be on the face of primary financial statement and what should be disclosed within a footnote. And I also agree with the staff's response in paragraph 38. That Sue mentioned, because I believe that quantitative materiality threshold is that can implement the kind of the things that matter, the application of other IFRS standards, if we once implement something quantitative materiality threshold in the one standard. So that will lead to unintended consequence in practice. And I also consider the similar type of risk can be dead if we provide too detailed guidance about disaggregation and aggregation. So I think the extent of the guidance, the detail of the guidance should be carefully drafted. Thank you.
Thank you, Mika. Tadeo?
Thank you, Hans. I agree with the staff's recommendation, especially on question 1B. I agree with the comment that Sue made. I was thinking about that when I was reading the document, what exactly these characteristics. At the end of the day, we are able to find difference between things that are quite similar. It's how much that we are going to take this into consideration. That is the point. Then I like the bringing the concept of materiality. Adjusting the text help, and likely a subtle change would be enough to bring the effect that we want. But at the same time, I believe that it is a matter of judgment. We can't include too many details as we may distance from our principle-based standard, but we can work well the base for conclusion to provide some insights to make the principle clear. I think that's the goal. Thank you.
Okay. Can we vote on the two questions together? Yes. Can I see who supports questions one and two?
Subject to drafting.
Yes.
Mary, is your hand? Oh, it is up. Okay. 13.
Okay. Anne, you're mute.
Sorry. The second topic discussed in the paper is the roles of the primary financial statements and the notes. Our analysis is set out on paragraphs 31 to 59 of the paper. We have two recommendations at this point. The first relates to the role of materiality in determining what should be included in the primary financial statements. We don't think materiality plays a determining role in the distinction between information for the notes and information to be presented in the primary financial statements. And by this, we mean that although all information presented in the primary financial statements must be material, not all material information can be included in the primary financial statements. So you can't, all the information that's going to be given in the financial statements will be material, but you can't use that idea of materiality to determine what goes into the primary financial statements and what goes into the notes. Hence, we recommend that paragraph 29 of IAS 1, which requires separate presentation on the face of the primary financial statements, should not be reinstated in the new IFRS standard. We also recommend that we add a reference to understandability in the description of the role of the primary financial statements. We expect that this will help entities in deciding what should be included in the primary financial statements and what should be included in the notes. These questions for the board are set out in paragraph 49 of the paper, and I'll hand over to the board for discussion.
Sue?
Thank you. Firstly, I very much agree with the sort of general observation that materiality is not the basis to make a cut between what's presented on the face and what's included in the notes to the financial statements. I think that's a helpful clarification. And I think understandability is a good addition to the thinking for deciding what should be on the face versus what's in the notes. On the not reinstating paragraph 29 of IAS 1, I think I agree, but just wanted to check if I could using a recent example. So when I read this paper, I thought that that paragraph sounded familiar. And the reason why it sounded familiar was it was a very useful reference point for a relatively recent agenda decision of the Interpretations Committee. And I think I'll just give a little bit of a précis because I think it's helpful to illustrate what I think we're trying to say, but I just want to make sure. So in that agenda decision, we were looking at the issue of supply chain financing, which was an issue about whether there's enough visibility, a question that came in from Moody's. And in the agenda decision, the committee concluded that there may be circumstances when it would be necessary to present a separate line item on the face of the statement of financial position for supply chain financing when the size, et cetera, was or nature of the financing was important for an understanding by investors. And one of the points that was used to support that was paragraph 29. So removing a paragraph that has recently been useful makes my, warning lights go off. But I think that the idea would be that it would still be the case that if that supply chain financing information was material and if a separate line item on the face was necessary for an understanding of an entity's financial position, we'd still expect the same outcome. We just wouldn't have that specific paragraph, but we would expect the same analysis to apply. Is that fair?
Yes, I think that's exactly right. So what we want to do in terms of looking at the role of the primary financial statements is to focus on the understandability of the summary. So this has to be a summary for the reasons about materiality that we've just been talking about. And the question is, what is necessary to be in there to make this an understandable summary of the entity's assets or liabilities or income and expenses. Um, and And we think that putting understandability in and focusing on understandability of this summary, of this overview, will be helpful. And we are thinking we'll try and explore whether we can develop more guidance on exactly what that means. So again, I mean, drawing out maybe a bit on what you were saying about, you know, you were worried about if there were large balances that weren't broken up and people ought to think about whether they needed disaggregation. Well, that applies clearly in the notes, but maybe it also applies on the face of the primary financial statements. And it's this idea maybe of proportionality. Are we getting enough disaggregation on the face of the primary statements in relation to the significance of the items, but given that it is a summary rather than all the material information? I think it's going to be quite difficult to develop guidance that's going to be robust, but I hope we can do something that would be helpful. But the outcome would be exactly as you described, we would expect.
Okay, on that basis, I'm happy for paragraph 29 not to be reinstated, but sort of with two sort of caveats. One is that, you know, if you look at the recent situation with COVID and the number of national standard setters who have felt it's necessary to put in place specific disclosure requirements around going concern, even though we had a general, you know, instruction that if you had significant judgment affecting, you know, amounts in the financial statements, there should be disclosure, which we think would have got you there anyway. I think we need to think about that, because I feel like there is a tendency that people like specificity. And so I think we just need to make sure that we get comfort people can work with something more generic. And also, I think it will be important for us to signal that, you know, removing paragraph 29 doesn't mean that in that supply chain financing type of example that we're suddenly saying, actually, we've changed our minds, don't worry about it anymore. It's rather we're trying to develop a principle. And we think that, you know, and if it's material and important for understandability, blah, 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 you should still present. We're just framing it slightly differently. But it's not that we're suddenly deleting a requirement. So with those caveats, I'm supportive.
Okay. Mary?
I think, like Sue, I have comments about the proposed drafting rather than disagreement with what you are trying to achieve. So just a few things to ask you to think about. When I look at paragraph 41 and your suggestion to add a statement about the objective is achieved by providing information in the primary financial statements and then in the notes, that sentence on its own sounds, okay, I'll use an American phrase, like motherhood and apple pie. It doesn't tell me enough that is specific. I think maybe in context it will be a bit more, but I think you probably want to look for a way to make that more specific and perhaps connect it more directly to what I agree is the helpful statement that materiality doesn't work as a basis for differentiating what goes on the face versus what goes in the notes. So that's one piece of drafting. A second piece of drafting that I had some concerns about is so the paragraph 44 statement that starts off paragraph 44 is, I think, more useful. Going back to the deletion of IS1 paragraph 29, I had the same concern that Sue did, that its removal could be seen as more significant than it is. However, I agree with your analysis that says we should not have this as a separate requirement, but I think you might want to think about keeping it as an observation that as a consequence, this is what's going to happen, rather than setting it out as a requirement, you know, a standalone requirement that you have to assess separately. And then the third thing is, I also agree with your idea of introducing the concept of understandability. However, I think if you do it as subtly as you've suggested in paragraph 49, just inserting the word under, you know, an understandable overview, that will work for people who are hanging on our every word in every one of these debates. But I think otherwise it might be too much in code. And I think it would be worth spending a few extra words to say either obtaining an overview in a way that supports understandability and comparability, just being more direct. But the other thing I'll say is I felt that the statements at the beginning of paragraph 55, the role of the primary financial statements, I'll give it a tweak, is providing a structured, comparable, and understanding summary, da-da-da, was a very useful anchor. And so I can't remember if we have that statement as a lead-off in the PFS document, but if we don't, I think I would build things around that, because again, it's a positive statement of what we want the primary financial statements to be. And then we could go on to say, materiality won't cut it for deciding what goes in the primary versus in the notes. You have to consider them all together, which is that somewhat abstract sentence that I was talking about. And I would give a more robust discussion of understandability, but I think you focused on the right thing, the right characteristic to introduce to help people make those distinctions. And as I said, I would think about messaging, keeping 29 not as a requirement, but as a comment and observation about the consequences of the principles that you're setting out.
If I can just come in on that, Mary, just to clarify, and on 29, I agree that 29 is often going to be the outcome of the application of our principle. However, only when it also coincides with helpful to with understanding of financial performance or position, depending on what statement it relates to. So it's not always going to be the outcome. And that is the reason we have not kept it in the exposure draft, because if it is there in isolation, it implies that whenever something of different nature or function is material, it has to be on the face. And what we are trying to now combine to say, yes, that is one of the criteria, but then you also have to look, does it improve understandability? So going back to Sue's example of trade payables, yes, you can't mix something with trade payables if it doesn't serve the same function. But then on the other hand, it doesn't necessarily mean if it is not in trade payables, it has to be its own separate line. It can be combined with others.
Yeah.
If it doesn't help understanding or financial position. So I just wanted to clarify that, but we can certainly work to incorporate this discussion.
And that's why maybe some slightly softer version, often usually da-da-da rather than thou shalt might help.
Yeah. Thank you.
Jin Chao.
Thank you, Hans. First of all, I agree with, to introduce a reference to understandability in relation to describe the role of primary financial statement. In terms of paragraph 29 of IS-1, I was not objective to remove this paragraph, but I do have similar concern as Sue and Mary mentioned, because currently maybe entities are applying paragraph 29 of IS-1 to include what kind of line item should be presented in the face of prime financial statement, and to try to build a common classification basis of those line items in the primary financial statement. So I hope that, as Sue mentioned, confirmed again, hopefully removing that paragraph, the outcome should also be same. For example, some item already be disclosed in the presented in the primary financial statement, and maybe those information is still useful to users. So hopefully outcome will be not changed. And secondly, I do feel that classification of the role of materiality in this regard is helpful. I understand materiality will not be the determining factor in this regard, but maybe, as I think, as Aida said, maybe one of the factors will be considered to determine what kind of item will be presented in the financial statement. So I think this kind of clarification will be helpful. And also, I think further guidance could be developed also could be helpful. For example, because currently the our proposed paragraph 20 is a little bit generic, I think. So, for example, paragraph 52, 53, 54, and 55, although those guidance are developed in relation to the, we call the, you know, the digital reporting purpose, I think not only digital reporting purpose, for example, particularly paragraph 53, we propose some kind of hierarchy of disaggregation for the statement of profit or loss, you know, what kind of, for example, what kind of sub line item, classification needed. I think this kind of guidance actually very helpful to apply the principle developed in paragraph 20. And also, this guidance only related to the statement of profit or loss. I also think maybe further guidance on statement of financial position also would be helpful. Thank you.
Tadeo?
Thank you, Hans. I agree with the staff recommendation paragraph, that paragraph 29 should not be restated, and fully agree with including a reference to understandability, especially on paragraph 44. I agree that materiality is one of the criteria, but not the determining criterion for deciding what should be the primary financial statements and what should be the notes. That's why I understood that Anne has just described. In this regard, I really like paragraph 2.34 of the framework. I consider it as a piece of art, asking that information be classified, characterized, and presented clearly and concisely to make it understandable. In my previous job, I remember asking the company to provide me in advance with a balance sheet and income statement, then I could plan my work. And then they used to send me the trial balance. I will need it, but at this time, that's not what I ask it. I have to spend time summarizing it before going to the details. I want to look at the figures and have a good idea at a glance. At this point, conciseness is key and requires a combination of criteria to be worked, especially as we are mentioning here, materiality and understandability. I think when we work with them together, we can get a very good piece of information. I think this stuff is in the right direction. Thank you.
Rika?
Thank you, Hans. I think I agree with the staff recommendation about the implementation of understandability as staff recommended here, because I think this concept of understandability exists in the existing IS1, like paragraph 30A of IS1. So, but it exists more passive way than what staff recommend here. But I think a more active application of the understandability as a way the conceptual framework defined is really effective in improving the information presented on the primary financial statement. I agree with what Tadu already mentioned. So at the same time, I really understand the concerns mentioned by Sue, Mary, and Jin Zhao about paragraph 29. I agree with there might be cases that practitioner consider this existing paragraph of 29 might contradict what we are proposing about understandability. So I think, it's better for us to not to reinstate that exact same paragraph here in the text, But at the same time, instead of reinstating that paragraph, it's really essential for us to help preparers and auditors, regulators, understand how the concept of materiality applying to the financial statement as a whole relate to the application of this understandability to identify the information either presented on the primary financial statement or disclosed in the footnote. I really have the sympathy with what Jin-Chao mentioned, because consideration of materiality is still necessary when the preparers consider what should be presented on the primary financial statement. So I think, yes, the guidance or some other, maybe the application guidance and the basis will help more stakeholders to understand what the linkage between the application, the materiality, and the understandability. And I also have a similar thought about the word of an understandable overview in paragraph 49, as Mary mentioned. I think if it's possible for the staff to draft in a good way about explaining about the understandability about this overview, I don't think implementation of a new idea and a new word of an understandable overview should be avoided. Thank you.
Okay, Zach.
Thanks. Fascinating sort of conceptual paper to think about. And in this case, I'm wondering if anchoring to something at a slightly lower level might help. So to me, coming into a project that was already in progress, one of the genius portions of the project was to bring the level of anchoring down from the entire statement of profit and loss to really focus on the subtotals and what belongs where. And so when I think conceptually about what we're doing here in disaggregation is in creating an understandability bridge between those subtotals rather than to the entirety. And so things become material to the delta between the subtotals and in understanding that delta. And then almost conceptually, the notes become material to understanding the disaggregated line items that you see in the statement of profit and loss. And it becomes a little bit more difficult on something like the balance sheet because we don't have as many defined subtotals, but that's a project for another day. But I think, at least for me, I was wondering if somehow bringing in that core concept of the PFS project of the subtotals might provide a little bit more clarity. Because when I read the understandability paragraph in particular, I agree that it wasn't strong enough. It wasn't forceful enough. And if we could use something to strengthen it, that would help. Over to you, Hans.
Okay. Are we ready to vote? There have also been some suggestions again that the staff might find useful. Can we vote for the two questions at the same time? Sue?
Thirteen.
Okay. We go to the final question, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
So we've also considered the implications of digital access to financial statements and whether it's possible to develop further guidance on what should be included in the primary financial statements. And on that last point, I think some of your discussion just now has been really helpful in thinking about how to develop further guidance on understandability so that we can come up with a sort of a useful replacement for paragraph 29 of IS1. And Zach, I liked your idea because that sort of is again, links to the way that we've thought about this for the primary, for the digital access, thinking about it as a hierarchy of disaggregation, and how in P&L we've identified operating, investing and financing. So we've sort of given them the next step down. And so I think that's all really helpful. Thank you. And so at this point, we just ask if you've got any other comments on the implications of digital access. But if you did have any other thoughts on how we might develop further guidance, that would be helpful as well. Thank you.
Anne?
Thanks, Hans. And thanks. I think it's good to have this in the paper because it's easy for people who haven't thought much about how digital works to think that you don't need the structure. So what you're doing here is explaining to us and others why we do need the structure. I just wondered where you're going to go with this information. Is there some, do you want, is it to feed into something else, this kind of information, or is it going to appear somewhere else?
Well, I think it will certainly appear, I would hope, in the basis for the new standard to show that we have responded to feedback that we've received about, you know, do primary financial statements have any role if you're accessing information digitally, to explain about how we're thinking about this. And I think it will help us in developing this guidance that we're talking about exploring. So from the point of view of this project, that's what I am thinking we'll take from this analysis. I think it's also true that the taxonomy team may want to think about how to, when they come to develop their taxonomy requirements for the new standard coming out of this process, will want to think about what sort of linkages they can include in their tagging or their labeling. I might be using the wrong terms. I'm definitely not a taxonomy expert. So I think there's a sort of two-way flow between, you know, the discussions we've had with the taxonomy team have certainly enhanced my understanding and thinking about what we might want to do in this project. And I think it'll go the other way, that the things that we're trying to do, the structure that we're trying to impose through this project on the financial statements ought to help the taxonomy team in improving the way their taxonomy works. So I think it sort of flows both ways.
Okay.
I think what you're doing here with the structure, it also confirms how important the subtotals are for digital, not just for paper-based. Thank you.
Nick?
Thank you. So I welcome the staff's analysis here. I think the primary financial statements can have an essential role to use, to play in the use of electronic data. The taxonomy is often presented as structured data, but actually my experience as a user, it's very difficult to understand how the various tag components relate to each other. It actually feels entirely unstructured. Now, what this project's done in terms of the P&L is it's given me a mental map of how that P&L fits together. I can start to build a structure from those tagged items. I think there probably is more work to be done here by the taxonomy team. Also, I think it would be interesting if we could tag items to differentiate what's presented as part of primary financial statements and what's only disclosed in the notes. Again, that would have utility and help me as I try and pull components together to build P&Ls on a consistent and comparable basis. So I think this is really on the money. Thank you.
Rika.
Thank you. Thank you for staff adding this section to today's paper. I really think I appreciate today's subtitle of this section. It said digital access of financial information rather than just focusing on digital reporting. So I think going forward, we continue to discuss about this type of the matter this project. And I also think today's discussion about the improvement in the structure and adding the and enhancing the guidance about the aggregation and disaggregation, that will make good layers and hierarchy of information more clearly and probably more consistently over different countries, companies. So I think I agree with Zach's comments. So I think this will help the digital access in different various ways. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Rika. Jen Chao.
Thank you, Hans. Just to echo what the others said, that I think you're thinking about the structure and disaggregation, you know, hierarchy from digital perspective, obviously very useful. But I just want to mention that, for example, as I mentioned before, the guidance in paragraph 53, this kind of guidance actually not only helpful from digital perspective, also for paper perspective. So I hope that this kind of guidance could be included in some area, you know, in our few forthcoming standards or something area. Yeah, thank you.
Tadeo?
Thank you, Hans. I agree that a structured, comparable, and understandable summary as it is proposed in this project is helpful in providing a context and a starting point for digital access to the information. It acts as an anchor, especially in relation to the information that is tailored, that is the entity specific. I really think that this is the way to go. Thank you.
And finally, Zach.
And just to follow on from Nick's comment, I think it's worth exploring with the taxonomy team in relation to this project, adding some additional information focused on usability. So to Nick's example of trying to recreate P&L for a company using the taxonomy, you can do that. And it becomes quite easy as long as you have the paper P&L right next to you, which is a less usable format than we're really shooting for. I think what would be great is, because we now have a structure, to think about how we can describe that structure in the taxonomy so that users can work backwards. So if their mandate is, I want to recreate the P&L, the taxonomy would actually include enough data such that you could pull up a company's entire profit and loss statement, just knowing I am looking for the profit and loss statement, not knowing the exact line items. And I think that becomes more possible with the PFS project, and that's why I bring it up in this context. So I think there are some great opportunities, particularly in thinking around second layers of data, for example, the operating expenses versus investing line items versus financing on the P&L statement, or whatever terms we decide to use. If we decide to change those to be less directly correlated to the cash flow statement, where they're not necessarily the same, I think could go a long way towards making the taxonomy more user-friendly and bring about some more usage and adoption.
Okay, thank you, Zach. I believe this brings us to the end of this conversation. Anne, or do you have something to add?
I just thought I'd do a very quick sum up, which of what we've heard. So, I think you think we're heading in the right direction on both the disaggregation and the roles of the primary financial statements and the notes, but that we need to be very careful in how we draft in order to get the important messages across clearly and signal the right things. And you think it is worth developing further guidance both on disaggregation and the roles of the primary financial statements to see if we can develop a robust framework for people to use. So that's sort of what I'm taking away. And thank you very much. It was really helpful discussion. Thank you. Aida, okay. Do you want to add anything?
No, thank you. As Anne said, this was really helpful, and you know, it was a great kind of conceptual discussion that will then help us to progress. As you know, we have a number of other topics in relation to disaggregation, which we are yet to bring to the board. So we will use, you know, what we discuss here as we prepare those papers as well.
Okay, thank you. That brings us to the final topic of today, which is the IFRIC update. And to whom do I give the floor?